Hello, everyone, and welcome to another podcast brought to you by Ayers LA. My name is Nancy Porter, and this session I'm happy to bring you articles from The Week magazine, which presents a selection of articles from condensed versions of news articles from global sources. And it's interesting. I very seldom completely read the cover of the magazine, but it's always interesting, and usually in some form of a cartoon. But down at the bottom it says, "All you need to know about everything that matters." Okay, we need to finish up about from articles from the March 7th, 2025 issue. And I need to remind you that you're listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items read on Ayers LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers, and no unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Okay, let's turn to the technology section. And here's well, it's just really kind of interesting. Space Age Living, the race for robot servants. A robot butler in every home sounds like the stuff of science fiction, said Mark Grummer in Bloomberg. But we're getting closer. Two tech giants, Meta and Apple, have recently begun preparing to go head-to-head in the battle to bring to market humanoid robots that can fold your laundry, load up the dishwasher, or even push the kids on the swing. They're entering a playing field where roughly a dozen other robotics companies like 1X Technologies are already working on similar projects. They'll also be up against Tesla, which has been developing its general-purpose robot Optimus since 2021. We're still years away from humanoids being commonplace or remotely affordable, but it's clear that companies are taking the work very seriously. Meta is starting a new unit dedicated to the development of humanoid technology, with the near-term goal of building the underlying software platform that can bring robots to life. Apple's robotics work is being overseen by Kevin Lynch, who helped create the original Apple smartwatch. Recreating Rosie from the Jetsons has been the fantasy ever since the cartoon premiered in the 1960s, said John Costier in Forbes. Humanoid robots that can augment or replace human labor are a blue ocean field of opportunity with no clear leader yet. But taking on a massive project like this one is not for the faint of heart. Apple knows it. It spent more than $10 billion on an electronic vehicle concept, the Apple Car, only to eventually kill the project after numerous setbacks. That's why tech companies should focus on more realistic artificial intelligence applications, said Robin Harding in Financial Times, such as robo-taxis and robot vacuums. Creating a humanoid robot that can cook dinner and clean toilets is an order of magnitude more difficult because it requires breakthroughs in hardware, not software. Accurately replacing human muscle movements and discriminating objects via touch is proving extraordinarily costly and complicated. Even a revolution in AI does not make these physical obstacles disappear. But AI will help, said Nicholas Wright in Foreign Policy. Tech companies have exhausted all the world's easily accessible data for training models. What's left is data grounded in reality from a robot that is learning, like a child does, how to act in the physical world. Building human-like robots that can interact with humans leads to more data from which their AI can learn, which leads to better AI that enhances the robots so they can take on more jobs. This is the mutually reinforcing spiral that makes humanoid robots such a glittering prize. Already, China is pouring a fire hose of startups into humanoid robots. The U.S. is finally recognizing that the scramble to build Rosie may be the most consequential technological race of the next decade. All right, let's move on to the health and science section. Headline, don't eat from takeout boxes. Eating from plastic takeout containers may sharply increase your risk of congestive heart failure, reports The Guardian. In a two-part study, researchers in China first looked at health and diet data from more than 3,000 people. They found that those who ate more frequently from plastic takeout containers had an increased risk of heart disease. To test whether the container, and not the restaurant food, was the culprit, they exposed rats to the chemicals in containers by pouring water, boiling water into the boxes and then giving that water to the rats to drink for several months. In the rodents' gut biomes and feces, they found evidence of several significant changes likely caused by the chemicals leaking into the water. Ingestion of these leachates altered the intestinal microenvironment, affected gut microbiota composition, and modified gut microbiota metabolites, particularly those linked to inflammation and oxidative stress, the authors wrote. They found that the amount of time the boiling water spent in the containers, they tried 1 minute, 5 minutes, and 15 minutes, had no effect on the results. And they also found that the rat's heart tissue appeared to be damaged. While the study itself provides no recommendations for how to avoid these risks, public health officials have long advised people not to microwave food in plastic containers or put food in them for storage while it's still hot. All right, next article, headlines. Headphones hurt kids' hearing. Noise-canceling headphones may be damaging young people's hearing. The technology, which effectively lowers the volume of distracting noises in loud places, is a common feature in modern earphones. But there is mounting evidence that excessive use robs the brain of practice processing background noise. This could cause auditory processing disorder, which leaves people unable to understand spoken words and other sounds. Several hospital departments in the UK say they have seen rising numbers of young people coming in with hearing problems. One factor may be the desire to work in silence. Research by SonarWorks, an audio technology company, found that almost 50% of millennials don't listen to anything when wearing headphones at work, along with more than 25% of Gen Z. Our brain is remarkably adaptable. The more we engage it, the better it functions, especially when it comes to processing sounds and noise, Claire Benton, president of the British Academy of Audiology, tells The Times in the United Kingdom. Think of it as use it or lose it. And the last article in the health and science section, headline, dance for your exercise. When health experts say people should do about 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous exercise a week, they're usually talking about going to the gym, playing sports, or running. But a new study suggests there may be an easier way to get in those active minutes, reports The Telegraph in the United Kingdom. Just dance around the house for 20 minutes. Researchers at Northeastern University asked 48 people aged 18 to 83 to dance for 5 minutes, any way they wanted, hip-hop moves, cha-cha-cha, whatever, and measured their heart rate and oxygen uptake as they did it. The idea, says lead author Aston McCullough, was to see whether they would reach a health-enhancing level of activity without being given any further instructions. The answer was yes, he says. They just put on their own music and danced around, and even when they didn't have music on, they were still reaching that level. The findings suggest that 4 a day of these 5-minute bursts of so-called solo freedom dancing could be enough to meet recommended exercise guidelines, with the added bonus of being free and fun. All right, let's look at the business section titled Making Money. Headline. Entitlements. DOGE goes after Social Security. Elon Musk is trying to convince Americans that our Social Security system is overrun by massive fraud, said Nancy Altman in the publication titled The Hill. He's sent his DOGE minions in and come out with a claim that Social Security is paying out funds to millions of beneficiaries over 100 years old. That is completely false. And in reality, the hardworking civil servants at the Social Security Administration are extremely diligent in tracking the deaths of beneficiaries. But finding fraud is not DOGE's real aim here. Musk has made no secret of his disdain for our Social Security system. It's the same disdain that a few ultra-wealthy conservatives have expressed for decades. The difference is that now President Trump is giving Musk the power to steal our earned benefits. Musk's assertions about outrageous Social Security fraud have been almost instantly debunked, said Philip Bump in the Washington Post. Recently, Musk tweeted that DOGE had found records of Social Security recipients who claimed to be as old as 150. It didn't take long for other tech guys to point out that this was obviously a data error in an old system. In 2023, the department's inspector general released a report on the same thing. There are millions of probably dead people in the Social Security Administration system. However, only 13 beneficiaries aged 112 or older were being sent checks. But Musk isn't very interested in the truth. He wants to create enough skepticism about Social Security that all government funding will be rejected as dubious. Fraud or not, Social Security is like the Titanic heading toward an iceberg, said Star Parker in Rear Clear Politics, and we've set it on automatic pilot. Our founding fathers would be aghast that today practically every young American is forced to pay into a Social Security that cannot fiscally honor its promised benefits by the time they retire. We must free young Americans from this tragic course. A year ago, 178 House Republicans proposed modest adjustments to the retirement age for future Social Security recipients, said Paul Brandes in MarketWatch. The vast majority of those Republicans were reelected in November. Voters no longer see Social Security as untouchable, and entitlements are on the table. Musk's bluster would be less scary if not for other missteps, said Gabriel Rubin in Reuters. DOGE has already made the government stumble into blunders like mistakenly firing critical nuclear safety workers, who then had to be urgently rehired. Giving Musk the power to meddle with Social Security risks similar mistakes that could cut off payments to the program's 69 million recipients, many of whom rely on the benefit. Even if you want changes to Social Security, brazenly sowing doubt about the program with baseless claims of fraud is playing with fire. Well, here's a little bit on what the experts say. Headline: a big surprise on college costs. Contrary to popular belief, college is actually getting more affordable, said Rose Horowitz in The Atlantic. There's no denying that the official cost of attendance at U.S. colleges has increased dramatically in recent years. But a shrinking share of students is actually paying the sticker price. An overwhelming majority, 82% at public colleges, 87% at private universities, received some financial aid in the 21-22 school year from federal programs, state appropriations, or the colleges themselves. Since 2015, the net cost of attending a public four-year university has fallen by 21% before adjusting for inflation. And even at private schools, it's down 12% after inflation. Once tax benefits are factored in, Americans today are paying the same amount for tuition as they were in the 1990s. All right, and that will end our coverage of the March 7th issue. Let's move now to the current issue, the March 28th issue. Let's look at Best Columns International. from New Zealand. Navigating a World with No U.S. Partner by Richard Prebby in the New Zealand Herald. Normally, fact-checking a foreign leader wouldn't be a sacking offense, said Richard Prebble. But when Phil Goff, our ambassador to the United Kingdom, questioned whether President Trump knows his history, the government gave him the boot. Foreign Minister Winston Peters felt he had no choice. Someone in Goff's position, he said, is not able to free think. You are the face of New Zealand. Translation: Trump is notoriously thin-skinned, and crossing him can backfire catastrophically on the entire country. This sensitivity, of course, doesn't go both ways. Trump routinely blasts his counterparts in other countries as nasty and two-faced. But New Zealand is not a superpower. We have only been able to have an independent foreign policy recently. Until Chinese warships did live fire drills in the Tasman Sea in late February, the entire Pacific had been the U.S. Seventh Fleet's lake. And as an island, we are reliant on the global system of free trade that Trump is now undermining with tariffs. Still, in just 18 months, Trump, who seems all-powerful today, will be a weak, lame duck president. Our job is to keep out of the way until then so he doesn't wreck our economy along with his own. When the elephant is dancing, the mice should stay off the dance floor. All right, let's look at a column from Europe. Headline: How They See Us, Making Trump Regret Those Wine Tariffs. Hands off our bubbles, said Emmanuel Beretta in Le Point from France. President Donald Trump has once again drawn his favorite weapon, massive tariffs, and threatened that if the European Union does not rescind its 50% tariff on American whiskey, set to take effect next month, the United States will hit EU countries with a 200% tariff on wine and spirits. The entire world is ripping us off, Trump bellowed on social media. Never mind that European leaders only imposed their liquor tax to answer Trump's 25% tariff on steel and aluminum. Endless retaliation will hurt everyone, of course. But if Trump insists on playing this game, we have no choice but to match him move for move, to show that Europe will no longer let itself be trampled. We have options. For example, targeted customs duties or import-export restrictions. And if Trump hits our precious champagne, we can wallop back against American drinks, like Coca-Cola. Remember, Mr. President, shaking the bottle too much sometimes sends the cork flying into your face. Trump's trade war is a ticking time bomb, said Solveig Godeluk and Richard Hyatt in Les Echos from France. It will truly explode on April 2nd when he imposes duties on specific imports, including microchips, lumber, cars, and pharmaceuticals, as well as reciprocal tariffs on thousands of other items. He's trying to force Europe to lower its value-added tax, which he considers a trade barrier, even though it's seldom been treated as such in world trade talks, and to lower its taxes on digital giants. If Trump does what he has threatened, he will set fire to an international system that has worked well for decades. It's idiocy. Yet, here we are again, fighting stupid with more stupid, said Jacob Hanke-Vela and Handelsblatt from Germany. In Trump's first term, the then head of the EU, Jean-Claude Juncker, admitted that retaliatory tariffs to answer Trump's steel tariffs were a dumb idea, but concluded, "We can be that stupid. We have to be that stupid." Trump needs to learn that others can respond with brute force as well. He can't continue his economic bullying if everyone fights back. These Trumpian whims are already backfiring, said Lechome from Belgium in an editorial. Prices are rising. Farmers are panicking. Businesses are worried. Even Tesla, which is run by Trump sidekick Elon Musk, sent the administration letter urging it to ease up. That's good advice for us, too. The worst trade barriers we face are the regulations and subsidies that differ from EU country to EU country. Eliminating these impediments to intra-European trade might be the only way for the time being to confront the madness in Washington. Time will do the rest, said Bart Eckhout in De Morgan from Belgium. In 1930, President Herbert Hoover signed high import tariffs to help U.S. farmers and wound up supercharging the Great Depression. Trump is flinging tariffs like he's throwing darts at a board, creating uncertainty, raising business costs, and tanking stocks. When this hits the bank accounts of his powerful sponsors, internal pressure will force him to back down. There will be no time for Schlackenfreude, said then. Europe will have to pick up the pieces with or without our former ally and protector. This article comes from Norway. Making a fortune off Ukraine's war. Our European neighbors must think we're a nation of money grubbers, and war profiteers, said Asbjørn Svarstad. Norway has amassed a huge windfall from the Ukraine war that could solve the continent's defense problems instantly. Our sovereign wealth fund is now worth $1.8 trillion, and $118 billion of that came straight from our neighbors' pockets. Shortly after Russia invaded Ukraine, Vladimir Putin cut off Russian gas supplies to Europe, sending energy prices skyrocketing. That left Norway, the continent's biggest gas supplier, to lap up the profits. All the while, the same European allies we were gouging were pushing their budgets to the limit to help fund Ukraine's fight. Now the war has reached a critical turning point, with increasingly unfriendly signals from Washington, as President Trump squeezes Kiev and flirts with Moscow. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen's plan for an $800 billion plus fund to rearm UAE countries and help replace disappearing U.S. aid is creating a massive new burden. We owe it to our allies to start plowing money into the effort. Yet until this month, when we belatedly more than doubled our Ukraine aid to $8 billion, we were actually giving the beleaguered country a smaller share of GDP than our Scandinavian neighbors. Thanks to our stinginess, people now see us as Europe's Uncle Scrooge. Okay, let's move on to talking points. Title, Tesla, the focus of anti-Doge rage. Tesla is in trouble, said Jay Willis in Fast Company, and its CEO is to blame. Since Elon Musk began laying waste to the federal government through his Department of Government Efficiency, demonstrations outside Tesla showrooms have become weekly events, with protesters waving signs reading, "Nobody elected Musk," and "No swastikas." Embarrassed, Tesla owners are selling their electric vehicles, often at a loss, or buying bumper stickers that read, "I bought this before Elon went crazy." Vandals have hurled everything from Molotov cocktails to dog poop at the company's cars, charging stations, and dealerships. The anti-Musk backlash has dented Tesla's bottom line. U.S. sales fell 11% in January year-on-year, and its stock has sunk by half since December. Musk's net worth, estimated at $500 billion late last year, now sits at about $320 billion. In a bid to boost his ally's shrinking fortune, President Trump last week turned the White House into a temporary Tesla lot. "Wow, that's beautiful," Trump said as he climbed into a red Model S parked on the South Lawn. He even promised to buy the $79,490 EV with a personal check. "Liberals are sabotaging their own cause," said Ingrid Jacques in USA Today. Only a year ago, Tesla, which commands nearly half the domestic EV market, was a key part of Democrats' climate-saving agenda. But now that Musk has turned against big government liberalism, leftists are torching Cybertrucks, intimidating Tesla salespeople, and even shooting at dealerships, as they've done twice this month in Oregon. Trump was right to defend a great American company and to warn vandals that their politically motivated crimes will be treated as domestic terrorism. "Yes, vandalism is bad," said Lauren Egan in The Bulwark, "but boycotts are an all-American activity. Remember how conservatives went after Target and Bud Light owner Anheuser-Busch for being woke? If anti-Tesla activists can make Musk and Trump feel a modicum of pain and rethink their onslaught, that will be a win." "Musk might not care," said Devin Schwartz in Vox. "At Doge, he has an unprecedented level of access to the American government and power. He can gut regulators that oversee his business and tap them for valuable information about competitors. He could even use his position to persuade the Federal Aviation Administration to transfer a $2.4 billion telecoms contract from Verizon to his own Starlink system, something the FAA is reportedly at least considering. For Musk, a few thousand unsold Teslas might well be a price worth paying." The next article, 5 years on, how COVID changed everything. When COVID-19 was declared a pandemic 5 years ago, it triggered a brief moment of radical unity, said Janelle Nanos in the Boston Globe. "Huddled in our homes, we rallied as the virus swept our communities and gasping victims flooded emergency rooms. We sewed masks, looked out for our neighbors, and celebrated first responders and frontline workers. As the grim toll mounted, at one point more than 4,000 Americans were dying every day from COVID, our political leaders made enormous investments in those in need, bailing out entire industries and sending $1,200 checks to nearly everyone, no questions asked. Meanwhile, scientists developed a vaccine at record speed, and some of us wept with joy as the first shot went into our arms. Political polarization dropped as a common foe brought us together. Then it all unraveled. The pandemic cleaved the nation into two distinct camps," said Kavita Patel and MSNBC.com. "In one were those who embraced public health mandates and collective responsibility. They masked, shunned gatherings, and lined up for vaccines. In the other camp were those who dismissed the virus dangers as overblown, saw personal liberty as paramount, and rebelled against mandates. Our experts gave them reason for wariness," said Megan McArdle in the Washington Post. "Mistakes were made, many understandable in the face of a novel threat, but others a result of political influence. The CDC let teachers' unions sway its recommendations on school closures, even as evidence mounted of how remote learning hurt children. And when George Floyd's killing sparked mass protest, public health officials suddenly stopped telling us to avoid crowds. If the pandemic split society in two, it's clear which side triumphed, said David Frum in The Atlantic. America's top vaccine foe, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., now runs Health and Human Services. And the National Institutes of Health could soon be led by Jay Bhattacharya, who wanted to let COVID spread unchecked to encourage herd immunity. We seem to have collectively forgotten COVID's horrors, said Kate Cohen in the Washington Post. This virus killed at least 7 million people worldwide, including 1.2 million Americans, and left millions more with long COVID. As a society, we're living with other long-term damage: higher housing prices, a youth mental health crisis, chronic mistrust of experts. If a true pandemic reckoning will come only when we're certain it's all over, well, then we're still waiting. All right, that will conclude our coverage of The Week magazine for this podcast. I need to remind you, you have been listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Items I've read on Airs LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers, and no unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Again, my name is Nancy Porter, and it has been my pleasure to share The Week magazine with you.